James Graff grew up in New Jersey. His father, then only in his mid-30s, had a serious heart attack, and the cost of his health treatment bankrupted the family. Jim remained in the United States until he completed his university education during the era of McCarthyism. In 1963, he came to Canada to teach philosophy at Victoria College, part of the University of Toronto. James Graff was devoted to the practical defense of human rights. The unpopularity of considering the Palestinian people as worthy as anyone else to have their rights respected never deterred or diverted him from his universalist commitment. James Graff died on October 23rd. Red Eye Collective member Mordecai Breenberg was a longtime friend and co-worker with Jim, and Mordecai has joined me here in the studio. Good morning, Mordecai.
Good morning, Lisa.
How long did you know Jim Graff?
I knew Jim for, I guess, about 18 years. I first came to know him when he approached me to be a board member of an organization he had initiated called the Near East Cultural and Educational Foundation, or for short, NECEF. And he was really the driving force in that organization.
What were the projects that NECEF undertook?
NECEF, under Jim's vision, had mainly two focal points. One was initiating and funding and sustaining a series of very important projects in the Middle East, in Palestine in particular, that made a real difference for the people living there. And one of his real central concerns was with the well-being of children. And he initiated a large-scale project which was to help train people in Palestine to deal with the massive traumas that young children were having because of the violence that had been inflicted either directly on them or very often on their family, which had been quite shattering experiences. He also initiated a project to train midwives so that pregnant mothers could have some trained and skilled help in childbirth. And he was also focused a lot on educational projects, extending the opportunities for education for Palestinian children. And the other dimension of the work was to bring to Canadians' attention much greater awareness of what really is happening in the Middle East and in the Palestinian situation. So he brought innumerable speakers here, people like Chomsky and Edward Said and Robert Fisk, but also very much concerned to bring activists from the West Bank, from Gaza, from Israel, Jewish Israelis, Palestinians who were involved in opposing the violation of human rights and the maintaining the an opposition to the occupation. And he initiated publications projects, which were another form of education. And as a result of all this, he became a very well-respected and central person in building networks both in North America but internationally. He was trusted and regarded for his honesty so and sincerity and steadfastness so much that he was really known quite worldwide.
What was Jim involved with outside of his work with NECEF?
He, as you mentioned in the introduction, he taught philosophy at the University of Toronto at Victoria College. His concern in philosophy was not arid analytical philosophy, but it was really the traditional moral philosophy, and he developed courses on the morality and immorality of war-making, of human rights courses, and so he devoted a great deal of energy to his teaching and was highly regarded by students for both the courses he taught and also for the way he took those ideas into practice. He was a great music lover. So whenever you were in his home, the home always resounded with symphonic, operatic, or concerto music. He wasn't a fan particularly of the kind of music we play on our show, but he certainly was one who deeply appreciated music, in part, I think, maybe, from his early years as a graduate student. He had a very serious vision impediment, and it got worse and worse, and he was in later years technically blind, but he would still sit at his computer, and he would have these, I remember watching, and a letter E, one letter would come filling the whole screen, and he would be reading letter by letter, and then, you know, guessing at what was coming. So he did work at the University of Toronto in his college to make it easier for vision impaired people to study and so on.
What were his personal qualities?
You know, there's an old fashioned word. It's sort of gone out of style, and it's called decent, and it encompasses, I guess, in my experience, a very deep honesty, graciousness in his relations with people. However much he may have disagreed, he always remained gracious. He was very patient, and he was very consistent in what he did. Another aspect, a sense you got from him, you know, many people espouse values, and you say, well, that's the value they believe in. He never espoused values. It was always integral to his whole personality. You just thought that person is a person who did not, he believes in, he is a person who holds these commitments and these dedications. And also, I think, very strange, particularly in my experience with people who've spent a long, long time in universities as faculty, he was utterly modest. He was modest about his idea. When he expressed an opinion, and he did that very simply and clear thinking, you didn't feel in responding that you were in any way attacking his personality. You were just discussing the issue. He made you completely at ease with that. And the modesty extended that he never drew attention to, and he didn't want people to pay attention to, any personal difficulties he had. I mentioned blindness, but even in dying, he did not draw attention to himself at all, and to his last hours was active in trying to see what transition could be made in the CEF organization, who could be involved, wrapping up projects, etc. He was, we would say selfless, but it sounds as though self-sacrificing. He just was a person who was modest.
You spoke at a memorial tribute to Jim along with others who knew him. Did you learn more about him through that, at that event, through that process?
I've been to events similar to this in the past, and one of the things that always struck me about them is that the person who was being memorialized had different aspects of their personality that they revealed to different people in different situations. And I came to accept that as completely normal, the reality. What was so striking about Jim was that everyone, whether they had known him as a younger person or in one setting or another setting, recognized and identified the same qualities. And it was as though he was a complete person who revealed himself to each and every person in the same way. So that was striking. I heard a young person who was 15 years old, a Jewish Canadian who had been active in trying to do some Palestine solidarity work in his high school. And what he spoke about was the sense of trust that Jim conveyed to him. I mean, Jim immediately took people and said, oh yes, do that. You want to do that. I'll help you do that. It wasn't sort of, I must keep control, or you should do it this way, or this is the best way, or you don't understand. It was conveying a complete confidence in anyone who was motivated in a human rights direction to be able to carry it through with their own capacities, and they could draw on his advice if they wished. The other thing that I think was very clear is Jim wasn't Palestinian, he wasn't Jewish, he wasn't Arab, he wasn't Muslim, and people from all those communities spoke at the memorial. And what impressed me was that he was respected by people from all the communities that he didn't belong to. So it to me, it was again saying this is an ordinary issue. Any human being can undertake the work for the human rights of the Palestinian people. You don't have to be of this constituency or that constituency. But people respected him for that.
In your tribute, you read from a poem by Rashid Hussein. What was its significance?
The poem by Rashid Hussein, a Palestinian poet, was about a teacher and his students, and the poem was written in the voice of the students. And the teacher is about 60 when the poem begins and age 70 when the poem ends. And the poem is about parsing sentences, identifying active verb, subject, noun, etc. And in this last verse that I read, the teacher enters the classroom quite exhilarated and talks about a man being makes a sentence up about a man being put in prison, and the man is in grammatical terms the object, but the students say the man is the subject, and they feel emancipated by that because, and they say they turn to struggle because they understood the reality behind the scene, so to speak. And I think that was what Jim was. Jim would take injustice and he would parse it. He would say, this is happening, that's happening, and show you all its ramifications in order to free you to unravel and oppose what he had just sort of analyzed. And so the poem brought, and he was a teacher, so the poem seemed to me to sort of represent some of the character of what I knew of him.
The Globe and Mail published an obituary for Jim. Were you pleased to see it?
Well, I thought the picture of Jim was wonderful. It had his sort of winsome, modest smile. What was striking was that the Globe and Mail chose to employ as the writer of the obituary a person who writes for the Canadian Jewish News, which opposes everything that Jim ever worked for and believed in. So to hire somebody who was so antagonistic, and when you read through the obituary, you can see the distortions and the slanders, even damning by faint praise, saying, well, Jim was trenchant in his criticism, in brackets, not anti-Semitic, as though people are always anti-Semitic, or he was so close to anti-Semitic, you really had to watch him very carefully, which was the last thing he was. Anyway, what came to my mind in reading that obituary, an image of Jim came to my mind, and I could hear him say, in a very calm, simple voice, well, Mort, what did you expect, the newspaper would say? And then, without missing a beat or anything, he would turn to some papers on his desk and say, now, we were discussing this project in Palestine. Let's get down to work again. That was Jim.
Thank you, Mordecai. I've been speaking with Mordecai Breenberg, friend of James Graff and a member of the board of NECEF, the Near East Cultural and Educational Foundation of Canada, the organization James Graff was instrumental in creating and leading. You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.